Blog Talk Radio.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Good evening. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from California, and tonight we have a spectacular guest, Lynn McTaggart, author of The Field and The Intention Experiment. I am so excited to talk to her about all of her scientific experience she has done with collective consciousness and really incredible things. So stay tuned. You're going to love it. But before we get into that, let's just take a second and do a commercial break.
Have you ever said to yourself, I want to quit smoking? Have you ever felt guilty about the money you are spending on cigarettes or what smoking may be doing to your health? Well, here's a fast, effective, and affordable way to quit smoking forever. Creative Guided Imagery and Hypnosis has an incredible stop smoking program that you can use in the privacy of your own home by simply listening to a wonderfully relaxing CD. Along with the 10-page instruction booklet, you get an outstanding homeopathic formula that immediately takes away those strong urges to ensure your complete success. Now, most quit smoking programs normally cost up to $400. You can get this program for a fraction of that cost. So why wait a day longer? Simply go to creativeguidedimagery.com. Save time, save money, and save your health by going to creativeguidedimagery.com. That's creativeguidedimagery.com.
Hi there. Jules here to tell you about the Center of Creation Meditation CD that will bring you into the perfect alpha state, then moving you into the theta state in which to effectively create your desires through your pineal gland located in the center of your brain. It's so easy to use. Just write down your desires in one sentence and then use the CD. But you must remember, this CD is so powerful, you've got to monitor your thoughts 4 to 6 hours after you listen to it. Yep, it's that effective. Go to lawofattractiontools.com hypnosis page and listen to the sample. You can download it immediately and start using it today. You'll love it. Remember, you can only get it on lawofattractiontools.com.
Great, we're back. Hey, next week we're going to have Barbara Cobranson with us again, and she's going to be talking about her brand new book, The Joy of Living. I've read it, and it is absolutely wonderful. You are going to absolutely love it. And then after that, we're going to have Dr. Jeffrey Long, MD, from the Near Death Experience Research Foundation as our guest. Oh my goodness, it's so exciting because Dr. Long has the largest database in the world on near-death experience research. Talk about exciting. It's going to be so interesting. And then we also will be having G.W. Hardin, who's going to be coming on and talking about all the exciting things that happened at the Gathering of One in Montana. So some really terrific guests are coming up in the month of July, so keep on tuning in, and I promise you we're going to bring you some really, really great information that you are absolutely going to love. I also want to remind you of the August 3rd and 4th workshop with Lee Harris and Story Waters in Los Angeles. You can go for just one day, or you can go for both. But it is truly a life-changing experience, so I hope that I can see everybody there. If you want to sign up for this, go to limitlessness.com. And then on August 8, 2008, which is 888, at 8:08 a.m. or 8:08 p.m., or really any time during the day, anywhere in the world, you can tune in and listen to the Peace and Prosperity Meditation for the United States of America. All those who participate with us will gain peace and prosperity individually, no matter where you live. You know, I was really surprised by the number of people who live outside of the country that want to participate in this. From what they're telling me, it's that if the U.S. can gain a very healthy economy, then it will ripple out to the other countries. So tune in and it will be another wonderful 30 minutes of pure bliss for you. I can promise you that. No charge to participate. Just tune in by going to lawofattractiontools.com and click the Listen Live button. Now let's get on with tonight's show. I'm sure many of you know about Lynn McTaggart. She's an award-winning journalist and author of the best-selling The Field and The Intention Experiment, which has been translated in 20 languages around the world. Lynn is also the founder of Living the Field, a masterclass that applies the ideas from the field to everyday life. She regularly holds international conferences and workshops on the science of spirituality and ways to incorporate the field and intention into your life. As a result of her field work, she has created a global laboratory to test the power of group intention, which I'm a part of. And you can find out all about it by going to www.theintentionexperiment.com. It's that easy. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you so much for coming on to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
It's really exciting to be on with you.
Well, thank you. Let's get down to some basic information. I know many of my listeners know all about you. But how did you come up with the idea of the intention experiment to begin with?
Well, it was quite an amazing thing. I was very interested in some of the implications of the research I had gathered for the field, which is that consciousness is an actual energy with the capacity to change physical matter. And in the process of doing that, I wanted to look at what intention is and how powerful it is and what you can do with it in real life. And I was also particularly fascinated by the whole idea of group intention. You know, what happens when multiple minds are trained on a target? And so I looked for evidence of this, and there were some really, there were some interesting bits here and there, but nothing really conclusive. And so my husband turned to me one night and said, "Why don't you do these experiments yourself?" And I, that whole concept sounded ridiculous to me because, I'm not a scientist. The last experiment I ran was in the 10th grade. I dissected the frog because my lab partner, who was a boy, he fainted. So, so it was left to me. When I started to think about it, I realized I knew lots of scientists through my work from the field, and the field was in something like 20 languages, so I've got lots of readers around the world. And I thought, well, if I put them together via the power of the internet, which could be used as a vehicle to bring everybody together, we'd have the biggest global laboratory in the world. So that's what we did, and that's what we've been doing over the past year, and it's been quite remarkable. We've been coming up with really astonishing results.
Well, tell us some of the results.
Well, what's happened was when we started, we thought, I kept thinking in my mind, I wanted to just have philanthropic targets because a lot of people have written about abundance and manifestation, but I thought, well, maybe we should use intention to, if it's that powerful, let's see what we can do to change the world. So I had in my mind, you know, let's save people from cancer and from burning buildings. But the first time I approached one of my scientists, Gary Schwartz, noted psychologist at the University of Arizona, he turns to me and says, great, let's start with a leaf. Let's see if we can change the light emissions of a leaf. Now, I was pretty deflated because, as I say, I had in mind, you know, we're going to rescue people from burning buildings here.
Yeah, right, so, right off the bat, yeah, right.
Yeah, but a leaf isn't exactly going to, you know, set the global consciousness on fire. But the more I started thinking about it, the more I realized this is really a good idea because we're doing something that has never been tried before, and we don't know how well it's going to work. And so we have to just see if we can have any effect, any even a subtle effect. So that's really where we started. We were, we had our first experiment at a conference that I was running in London, at which there were 400 people. And we had two leaves, not just one leaf, shown on a PowerPoint screen via a webcam image. And we had two leaves, one to act as control, and we let somebody in the audience randomly choose which one we were going to do by flipping a coin. We sent intention to that one leaf to make it glow. In other words, to increase the light emissions coming from the leaf, because all living things, leaves, plants, and human beings, and animals, all kind of manner of animals in between, emit a tiny current of light. So if we could show that we could change that, that would be, you know, something subtle but very distinctive. So we sent an intention to increase this light, to make it glow and glow. And then the scientists put these leaves under special cameras that record very, very faint light in outer space. So they're highly sensitive. And we didn't tell them which leaf we sent intention to, and it turned out that the leaf we sent intention was truly glowing, far under this camera, and you can visibly see it in the photographs compared to the control leaf. And the scientists were only told which leaf we sent intention to after they recorded them and photographed them. So then Dr. Schwartz and I moved on to plants, and we decided to see if we could make plants grow faster. We were we tried this on the internet then, and we had we were victims of our own success in our first big internet experiment in March 2007 because so many people tried to get on the site at the same time, something like 10,000, that the site crashed. So we realized, you know, we had been thinking so much about the experiments, we didn't really stop to think, what do we need to, in terms of server power, to carry out this kind of experiment? So then we moved on to we hired special server capacity from the people who power up the Pop Idol and American Idol. We figured these are people used to huge bandwidth.
Oh, yeah.
So they gave us, you know, we rented their server space, and we did an experiment, like the leaf experiment, this time with seeds, just trying to make them glow, and it truly worked again. So, and we had 7,000 people or more, you know, from all over the world participating. So then we moved on to plants, and we decided to see if we could make plants grow faster. And we, this time, Dr. Schwartz and his team prepared four sets of seeds. And again, they didn't know which ones we were going to send intention to. And I have made an intention experiment of lots of my talks that I do around the world. So one of them was in Sydney, Australia. And I thought, this is a perfect place for the first one because it's thousands of miles away from the target. Okay. Those seeds are sitting there in Tucson, Arizona. So we sent in, I asked one member of the audience to choose one of the four sets of seeds. Everybody sent intention for those seeds to grow faster and to sprout earlier than the others. The scientists didn't know which ones we sent intention to, planted all four sets of seeds, and then measured them after 5 days. And lo and behold, after they did their calculations, the seeds sent intention grew significantly higher than the others. So the scientists also ran a control of the controls where they would plant four sets of seeds that would have no intention on them and compare those with the batches that were sent intention. And that was interesting, too, because any group sent intention, where there was one sent intention of the four sets, always grew higher. The whole group grew higher than the ones without any intention. So we ran this same experiment 6 times over the internet with thousands of people around the globe, at Rhinebeck, New York, with just a small group of 100 people, with a bunch of experienced healers in Hilton Head, South Carolina, in Austin, Texas, in Palm Springs, and as I say, over the internet. So we had all these different groups, and each time the seed sent intention grew significantly higher than the others. In fact, the most interesting result of all came from those experienced healing touch practitioners in Hilton Head, because in that case, the seeds grew twice as high as the controls. And so it suggested to us, as we suspected, that size of group doesn't matter so much as experience. Experience is the thing that matters the most. Experience counts. And by experience, I mean learning certain techniques that really aid intention. The techniques, what I did when I was assembling the book, I interviewed a lot of intention masters, healing masters, Qigong masters, and Buddhist monks, and distilled from all of their different techniques a common thread, you know, all the common techniques that people could easily learn that would improve intention, like all of these various people used some form of highly focused mind, and they used all of their senses. They were in a state, a very, very enhanced and alert state, which is why I call this powering up, because we always think of a meditative state as being something where the brain is slowing down. And indeed, it is an ordinary meditation. But in intention, when, a Buddhist master or Buddhist monk is sending intention, he's sending it with every form of every pore of his body. And he's using his five senses. He has entered, in a sense, hyperspace. And also, his brain waves have actually sped up to something much faster than ordinary waking consciousness. So some of the things that I do in my workshops are teach people how to use intention, how to use these techniques, how to enter hyperspace, in a sense, how to use very highly focused mind techniques, highly focused heart techniques, and many other techniques to become a good intender. These are techniques. They're not something I've invented. I've just pulled together the best of and the most common techniques that intention masters are using. And they are these kinds of heart states, these kinds of emotional states. I've got other things, too, about I put together also some evidence from the science, which is the science shows that when you use a particular intention space and you use it over and over again, in studies using of mind over matter, you know, trying to affect something with the conscious mind, the effects work faster and better if they're done in the same space over time. So from that, I inferred, well, it's really important to have a particular intention space. So we talk about choosing a particular intention space. I also studied a lot of planetary influences on intention and find that certain times are actually beneficial for intention and much more beneficial than other times, having to do with solar activity. So we look at that, too. And there's a number of other things where I work on helping people to develop this, as I say, this very highly focused sense of using all your five senses and being very present to them in real time. And from there, sending a very, very highly focused and specific intention.
That's vital for everybody to come to grips with their five senses, and many, many people just in their everyday world don't even get to experience, or really don't, they just take it for granted, so they're losing out on a lot.
Absolutely. One of the interesting things we do, and again, we teach these in our workshops, what we found is, you know, people always think of intention as the big ask, the power thought you have during the day. And they make this distinction between that. They think that's the stuff that affects physical matter. But they think all the other thoughts they have for the rest of the day don't have any effect whatsoever. They're the ones that are locked inside you. But, you know, the science shows that we are sending and receiving at every moment. And if that's the case, we're like a leaky bucket. And every thought we have, all of our secret judgments, all of our negative thinking, all of our personal criticism, every last bit of flotsam and jetsam going through our mind, at the end of the day becomes our life's intention. And that is the thing that begins to leak out to the world. So that's the problem. People think that it's just the single thought. So what we try to do is show people that you must get yourself into a state of alignment where your intentions are actually being sent out all day long, and that they are, and your life and what you're actually doing in your life is also coherent and in alignment with what you want to be as your intention. So in a sense, your life as you're living it is your life's intention. And, you know, if that is your statement to the world, that is your divine purpose as you're living it. So if you're not living what should be your divine purpose, then you've got to examine all of that. And once again, that's something that we look at a lot in our workshops, is helping people align their everyday mendacious thinking with their life's intention, and to be focused on that all the time. And the other thing that we look at doing is, as I say, if we're senders and receivers at every moment, we work on helping people to become a better sender, and also, and importantly, a receiver, a better receiver. One of the things I'm really interested in and what we work on is the fact that, you know, you're picking up information all the time too, and you're picking it up and filtering it through your conscious mind. And so we try to help people get out of their conscious minds so that they are able to intuit this information more readily.
Well, let me ask you a question. If say a person is ill right now with a dreaded disease, and you have experiments that, you can actually send people good or healthy thoughts in order to help them, but I always thought it was the person who had to do that for themselves. Am I wrong here?
Well, it's just a different point of view, but I can tell you that with our work, we've seen that I believe that intention is magnified when it's sent to another person, and that the healer, the sender, also gets a benefit. Now, we've seen this, and I've been a kind of stunned witness to this on our website and in our workshops, because I've been, as I said, I'm really interested in the power of the group, and I've been experimenting with it, with our big group intentions, but also within little groups of 10 or 8. And what's happened is we've encouraged people on our website to form little groups and to send intention to each other. And what's happened is that they started sending healing intention to each other and have had remarkable effects. It all started with a Vietnam vet called Don Barry, who wrote to me last spring in 2007. And he said, you know, I'd like to be one of your intention experiments. I've got ankylosing spondylitis. That means his spine is more or less frozen, and he's in terrible constant pain. I'd like to see if your readers would like to send me intention. And so I thought to myself, well, that's an interesting project. Let's see if the readers would like to do that. So I invited them to do that. And they began sending, they on their own back, began to send him intention twice a week. And I then encouraged him to keep a diary. He writes me several months later, and he says, boy, I'm feeling a bit better. And then a few months after that, he writes me and he says, my pain is all gone now. And my doctor almost fell over because I actually moved. And he's never seen that before. So this sparked an idea for us, and we thought, wow, what if we do this every week? What if we have an intention of the week? Somebody is really ill, and we ask the community to send intention to this person. And so that's what we're doing. We do this at 5 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, which is in California, that would be 9 a.m. on a Saturday, every Saturday. And we we just invite everybody in our community to send a 10-minute intention to somebody who has been nominated. And we put their photo up, and we write about who they are and what they've got, you know, what kind of illness they have, and it's not just been illnesses. And we have this catalog of amazing results. We've even helped to reunite a teenage runaway with her family and to have her communicate better with them. We've had some cancer patients say that they've gone into remission. I mean, it's been remarkable stuff. And as I say, I've been a kind of a stunned witness to this. So then in our workshops that we've been bringing around to America this year, and by the way, we're going to be in Los Angeles on July 11th through 13th, we're going to be in Woodland Hills in the Marriott.
Oh, wonderful.
We're going to be there, and we're also running our workshop in Portland, too, in August, 8th to 10th, and then in Boston in October. And we, in our workshops, what we do is we organize people into little groups, and people stay with those groups all weekend. And we have people with healing challenges, you know, with some sort of health challenge, be a recipient of this group intention in these small groups. And then the next day they have to report what happened. And we're getting these amazing reports back of people who've had constant migraines, who suddenly don't have pain anymore, or people who say, my leg feels better than it ever has. And even on our website, I mean, we have small groups sending intention to each other. I found in one of the groups, there was a guy who was in a terrible gas explosion. And so his wife told the rest of his group, and in our workshop we create these groups and then we create them on the website afterwards so people can stay with their community that they met over the weekend. And so this group, particular group, said, okay, let's send intention to Daniel, who had this terrible burns on his hands. He was supposed to have skin grafts and stay in the hospital for months. And we've heard at the end of, you know, we heard after a very short time he was out in the hospital after 6 days. And he didn't need skin grafts after all. And yet his buddy, who had near identical burns on his hands, who didn't get intention, stayed in the hospital for weeks and weeks, and he ended up getting skin grafts. So it was an interesting experiment to us, in a sense, of a, you know, of one person and a control. But this has been going on, and I think what's interesting is this power of connection, because the person is right there and receiving it. And, you know, it was very interesting. Our organization, we run a newsletter called What Doctors Don't Tell You, and we look at medical information every week. And for one of our stories, we were looking at the real cause of stress. And we were fascinated to find that it wasn't money, lack of money, and it wasn't stresses at work. It was a sense of isolation. I was really interested in this. Even the lowest income people in America, it was demonstrated that they don't suffer stress as long as they have a strong spiritual community and they feel, you know, and they have a strong network. And here they are, you know, even people who are barely eking out a living can manage and be happy and be stress-free as long as they're not doing it alone. And so, again, this kind of sparked the idea that it's the group connection. There's a resonance effect that happens to people with giving and with intention, with altruism. You know, we're kind of hardwired for altruism, and it seems that we are in sending. It is the most powerful kind of intention you can have, and it's more powerful than, you know, than you know, sending it for yourself. Because I think what ends up happening is in sending it, so much resonance and so much almost multiplication of power happens. We find that the people doing the sending are reporting that they're being healed too. The healers are being healed too. They talk about how they are feeling better themselves. So it's an interesting phenomenon that we are observing.
Wow. This is so fascinating. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Thank
wow.
you. Okay. Well, and as I say, it's an ongoing experiment because we have just been asking the questions, both in, you know, what can you do with intention to change the world? And how much, and what is the power of group intention? And so with each workshop, with each experiment, we're learning more.
I mean, with water. Now, I know that we sent our intention to this water. What if we could dramatically change the water? What would that mean for humanity?
Well, I mean, what we were trying to do, we've done three experiments with water, as you know, Jules, and we, with the first two, we were just trying to change light emissions that occur in water, because in doing that, it suggests that we would be able to change the molecular structure of water. And with the third one, we focused directly on the intention of the structure of water. By structure, I mean the way the clusters of molecules for H2O cluster together, almost like rooms in a house. Now, scientists have seen that certain water, like healing water, like Lourdes, let's say, the water seems to have a different cluster from ordinary tap water. And they hypothesize that what's happening is that healing water has this different cluster structure. And these little weak bonds, which can change so easily, probably can turn water into something that is more healing. Now, the reason this is such an amazing and has such an amazing implication is, of course, there's the possibility that we could change and make more healing and purify ordinary water. But there's also the effect that we'd have on ourselves and on our food. We are about 80% water. Our animal foods, 80 to 90% water. Our plant foods, almost 100% water. So if we can alter water, we can change just about everything on the planet. Now, we've been working with Rustam Roy most recently, as I'm sure you know. He's from Penn State University, and he is one of the world's leading experts on water. And he's the first experiment we did with him, which is most recently our April experiment, we got inconclusive results. His scientists could see something happened, but they didn't have equipment sensitive enough, they felt, to really tease it out. So we're changing that protocol, and we'll be running it later this year. But, you know, it has a lot of implications. We're also going to run one with bacteria, where we want to try to alter bacteria with our thoughts. And that's a really good one, because there have been some studies showing that this can be done. But if we can do that, you know, change good bacteria, bad bacteria to good bacteria, that has huge implications. But the one that we're working on now is a really big idea. We decided to roll it out and try something really big. I was interested in the transcendental meditation studies, showing that when there's a certain percentage of meditators out there in a particular city, the crime rate goes down.
Right. That's John Hagelin.
That's right. Exactly.
Right. That's how we started doing collective consciousness meditations, too. Yes.
Fantastic. I mean, his work has been so good, and the implications are so profound. And it's really what started me thinking about the idea of trying to quantify intention and see, you know, if we can prove it with experiments. And so I've been kicking around this idea for a while of, you know, his demonstrates a change with passive activity, just the idea of meditating, you know, in a space, changes it and lowers violence, it seems. So I wondered, well, what will happen if a lot of people get into a powerful group state and try to send an actual intention to lower the violence? And so the plan is, I thought, well, I would do this in some, you know, hot spot with a lot of violence. And so I started mentioning this last year as one of our projects we'd like to do. And Deepak Chopra, I was talking on his radio show, and he said, I love this idea. I think we'd like to be involved, the Alliance for New Humanity. And then I started talking to the Association for Global New Thought, and Barbara Field said, I love this idea. I think we'll do this too. And before I knew it, the Unity Church wanted to be involved. The Oneness Foundation wants to be involved. And on and on and on. Because what we're doing is, you know, we now have the potential of hundreds of thousands of people joining in with this intention experiment. And the Association for Global New Thought has convinced us to run the first one on September 14th to tie in with Unity's 11 Days of Unity, which starts on September 11th. And I thought that's a wonderful idea. It's a great antidote to the 9/11 anniversary pictures. And we're already on the page with this. And so what we'd like to do is we're creating a web page. We have special web people looking at the bandwidth requirements we need. And we're going to ask people who are, you know, interested, various organizations, just to let their people know about it, tell them to come on at a certain time. They can even get their entire audience to get on with them while they're listening. You know, there's all sorts of things that we could do, but I think the whole idea is to get as many people. And the interesting thing is, other than, you know, unlike most such attempts before, there've been a lot of meditations for, you know, global climate change, for peace, all kinds of things where people have, you know, try to create big things like this via the internet. Because we're working with a whole team of scientists who are working with me, I'm working with Bob John and Brenda Dunn of the PAIR Project for Princeton University, and Roger Nelson, Global Consciousness Project, and Gary Schwartz of the University of Arizona, and David Orme Johnson, who worked with John Hagelin in actually setting up the protocol for the TM studies.
Oh, wow.
And you know, who's great. He's going to be on the page and working with us. And also Jessica Utz, who is the world's greatest statistician in parapsychology and consciousness research. And so she's a real stickler. So it won't be any fuzzy thinking. It'll either you know, if she shows that it works, then it'll carry a lot of credibility.
Everybody should go to that website on September 14th. Would there be a particular time or?
Well, what we're going to be doing is we'll be doing it in the morning of September 14th. We're still working out the time, but they should come to our website earlier and sign up,
okay,
which is www.theintentionexperiment.com. You'll see right on the front page, it says, join our Peace Intention Experiment September 14th and sign up now. And so we need everybody to sign up because we'll be sending them instructions. We'd rather that they have the instructions, they get a chance to practicing powering up. They have a whole bunch of kinds of practice type of things to do. And then they will also have the instructions of where to go and how to do it before September 14th. Otherwise, we're going to have a massive, massive traffic jam. I mean, we're going to be using huge server power, even with the front page of our website, but we're still going to need to try to direct people to different places. But we want people to sign up, too, because this will be the only experiment of this kind in history where we know every single person who's participated.
Exactly, and this needs to be documented. Together, we are so powerful. Forget world leaders. We can create peace truly on Earth by just coming together. So that's why this experiment is so important, and I'm going to be mentioning this all the time to my listeners up to September 14th, which is a Sunday. So they will,
exactly,
not forget. They will go there and sign up.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. We've got to show the world that we can do this. This is how we're going to get our message out to the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this is it. This is the exciting aspect of it. It's going to create a protocol, in a sense, for doing this. And we will have a number of how many people have done this, and we'll have a number of cities or places around the world. I mean, we're trying to see if it's possible for us to get the correct figures from Iraq. That would be such a wonderful place to start. But there are a whole bunch of challenges in doing this kind of experiment because, you know, a lot of things change the crime rate. You know, just saying, oh, it went down from Friday to Sunday because we sent intention isn't necessarily the case. It could be that there was a full moon. There was, you know, a huge flu epidemic. Men were called away or anything like that. So you have to control for all these other variables. That's what's really important. And so we'll be doing that.
Wow. Will the experiment be, like, people will be focusing in, like, for 10 minutes on the 14th?
Yeah, it'll be about 10 minutes, but I'm still working out the protocol with our scientists, but I believe it will be. They'll need to come on our site. There will be an image, a particular intention. We will not let anyone know what the target is yet because we don't want, and we found this with some intentions we've done in the past, people were able to get onto the experiment a day before, and it has muddied up our results a bit. So we won't reveal where the target is. It'll be a particular town or city somewhere in the world, and we'll just put it on the website, and when people have their instructions of where to go, they'll do that, and they'll come on, and they'll see the intention and everything that they need to do. There'll be some music playing, and we'll have our intention together. And what's interesting about these intention experiments is that people begin to feel, they have this palpable sense of oneness that is, you know, apparent to everyone. And so I think that's what's really exciting about it.
Well, this is going to be fun. Now, did I read somewhere that you're going to do another one like in October?
Yeah. Well, we have I'm coming to Los Angeles next week, and I'll be there for the July 11th to 13th, and we'll be at the Woodland Hills Marriott. And then we're off August again, once again, to Portland. It's the 8th through 10th of August in Portland, in the Portland, Vancouver, in the Hilton there, in Vancouver, Washington. And then in October, we're in Cape Cod. We're right on the beach in Cape Cod. We're spending Halloween on the beach with our audience. So it should be really fun. We're in a special hotel there, too. And I think that's October 31st to November 2nd. So people can, you know, log on to our website, www.theintentionworkshops.com, for more information.
Right. Good. Good. And there's still time to sign up for the July 11th seminar in L.A. in Woodland Hills. That would be great.
That would be wonderful. We'd love to see everybody there.
Okay, terrific. Now, let me ask you some questions about your book, because you wrote in there about zero-point field that allows for the non-locality to exist outside of the quantum world. Could you explain this a little bit?
For non-locality, you mean that non-locality exists in the world at large?
Yes.
Well, I was fascinated to find when I was doing research for the intention experiment that many of the weird effects of the quantum world, like non-locality and like indeterminacy the fact that something can't really be defined in the quantum world, you know, quantum entities exist as a potential of something. They're not an actual set anything yet. You know, they're a bit like unset jello. And the scientists have understood that this not quite something state, where they're kind of a state of all possible selves, only seems to collapse down to a single state when it is observed or a measurement is taken. Now, this was always believed to be the particular qualities of the physics of the small. And the physics of the large was supposed to be something very, very different. But we are now finding that actually the physics of the small and those qualities also exist in the physics of the big visible world we know. I mean, recent studies have shown that these kinds of this ability of a quantum particle to be in more than one place at the same time also exists among giant molecules, which are the building blocks of our sticks and stones universe. And also that this whole idea of non-locality, the instantaneous connection between two subatomic particles, no matter how far they're apart, also occurs among atoms and molecules. Once again, demonstrating that this seems to be a basic feature of life. And so as we're beginning to understand this, so we understand that there aren't two physics anymore, the physics of the large and small, there's just one physics of life.
Explain about the retro intention, something about the thought today to influence yesterday. That just seems like it's, you know, like something I saw on Star Trek. What is this all about?
Well, the whole idea of retro intention seems so counterintuitive, because we think that we are, you know, that time is a forward-moving arrow, and it only goes in one direction. But there have been some really interesting studies that seem to violate that completely. For instance, there was a study I recount in the intention experiment by an Israeli professor who actually wanted to debunk alternative medicine. What he did was he thought, I'll get together one of the most outrageous studies I can think of. So he took a group of patients who were very ill with blood sepsis, divided the group in half, and sent prayer intention to one of those two groups, and the other just had normal interventions. And he found, I believe to his astonishment, that the people sent prayer were better in every way. They got better sooner, they had fewer complications, they left the hospital earlier, all of that. The very interesting aspect of the story was just this, and the real kicker to it had to do with the fact that the patients were in the hospitals in the year between the years 1992 and 94, and the prayer was carried out in the year 2000, 6 to 8 years later. So this study was published in The Lancet and universally interpreted, to this Israeli doctor's horror, I believe, universally interpreted to mean that we can go back and change the past. Now, that seems pretty outrageous, but it was so well randomized, so well chosen, that it seems pretty hard to demonstrate that the better patients, the patients who got better quicker, would have just been put into one group. And it also, this whole idea that you can affect something back in time, so to speak, has been supported by an enormous amount of evidence. There is a lot of evidence on a thing called a random event generator, which is an electronic toss of a coin. It has heads and tails randomly show up. It usually shows up like as a computer screen, you know, image. Like, let's say you've got a computer in front of you and it flashes alternately pictures of cowboys and Indians. It will kind of randomly have cowboys 50% of the time and Indians 50% of the time. So with these experiments, mainly run by Princeton University, but also replicated elsewhere, they would sit a participant in front of the computer and tell them to think more cowboys. Say, I want more cowboys to show up on my screen than Indians. And over hundreds of thousands of trials, they've demonstrated that they can show this definitive effect, that they can, you know, that they can have significantly more cowboys than Indians when somebody thinks about it and directs their mind to intend that. So these same studies have also been attempted where the computer programs already run, but somebody's watching it and is supposed to send an intention to affect it back in time. And they find that with these studies, and they're done in a very well-controlled conditions, that even though the program is already run, somebody can send an intention and have it affected, as though it were affecting it at the time it was generated. They've also found that it can have the same effect if the person's sitting right in front of the computer as if they're sitting 3,000 miles away. That distance doesn't seem to matter either. So both time and space don't seem to matter with intention.
Well, then let me ask you a question. Is there any way that people might be picking up maybe psychic and can see what's going to happen in the future?
Well, remember, we're sending it backward.
Yeah.
So it's what's actually happening is the reverse, but that's absolutely right in the sense that people are sending an intention, in a sense, from the future to affect the present. And so there was one analysis of what's going on with these REG studies, and this was done by mathematical modeling, which showed, you know, it wondered whether or not the intention is going forward, or it is somehow intuiting the information from, or whether the information flow is backward. And the best mathematical model shows that the information is flowing backward. So what we're really saying is that when you send an intention, a retro intention, what you're doing is you're sending it and it's being received at the time whatever the activity is being generated. So it's not like you go back and change the past. It's that your intention goes back and changes what would have happened in the first place. And so another way of saying this is that your present is contingent upon future conditions, that the future is always shaking hands with the present. Very mind-warping stuff.
Wow, that is incredible. Now, can we go back? We can go back then and change our past. Say, perhaps we didn't get this job that was what we considered to be our dream job. Can we go back and change it to the fact that at a later date now that perhaps we could get that job?
I think that we don't really know to what extent we can apply this in real life. So what I suggest to people is to try to look at things that aren't solidified into a particular course of action and send your mind back to the point where it was generated. Let's say that you've got, you know, an easy way of thinking about this is if you've got just the very beginnings of an illness, if you go back to that beginning of the illness before it's really blown into something huge, send an intention to see if it changes. Or send an intention to a relationship that you have that has splintered somehow and see if you can repair it in some way. So those are methods of doing it.
Wow, that certainly will change life as we know it, won't it?
Absolutely.
That is incredible. I love it. I love it.
You just don't know, but it's worth trying, huh?
Yeah. So do you have an experiment for this?
Retro intention? I think that's one we have to design for the future. But, you know, there have been loads of studies like this. There have been a lot of retroactive studies retroactively affecting traffic in Vienna and also foot traffic in a supermarket using all kinds of light beams and showing, you know, having people walk through a certain place and then sending intentions later about which side of the supermarket they're going to be mostly walking on, and comparing that with a control time where they're, you know, right before or after where they're not sending an intention and just seeing what happens. So there have been a lot of very highly controlled studies like this, and they all seem to be demonstrating that this can work. There have even been studies looking at the process of moving forward in time in selections. There's a psychological test showing where you have to make choice A and then choice B. Now, usually we think the usual way that people think it works is that choice A will govern choice B. But what they're finding in these studies is that choice B governs choice A. So things are working back in time. It's just bizarre. So our whole ideas of cause and effect are really being turned on their heads.
Wow.
I know. Mind warping, as they say.
My gosh, this is wonderful. So you must write a book about this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you, is there any way that we can protect ourselves against negative intention? Because you just told us that we can go forward or backwards. What if somebody had something negative about us? What can we do there?
When we think of negative intention, we think that power, you know, that positive thoughts are more powerful than negative thoughts. And actually, that's not true. I mean, the evidence shows that a negative thought is just as powerful as a positive thought. So many people want to know, okay, well, I want to protect myself. What's the good psychic bubble to walk around in? How can I do that? And the question is, do we really want to do something like that? I think that if we're trying to connect with other people, the idea of separating off from them is a real big mistake. So what I looked at that makes a lot of sense to me is the work of John Diamond, Dr. John Diamond, who is, he's kind of the father of behavioral kinesiology, you know, muscle testing. And he's found that a toxic thought will affect a muscle and make it go weak just as much as a toxic substance. So he's tested thousands of people, thousands of patients with this, and found it to be the case. But one thing that's very, very interesting is he finds when people hold on to their divine purpose, they get in touch with what he calls their cantillation, or their, you know, the thing that gives them their, makes them feel like they're in touch with the divine, whether it's singing or baking the perfect chocolate cake. That becomes their strengthening tool, and that is what he calls their homing thought. And if you can hold on to that thought, it can make you extremely powerful to whatever somebody is throwing at you. And I think that that's a really good idea. If people just get grounded in what they were put on this earth to do, that seems to be a powerful antidote.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, that's terrific. And we are almost out of time, but Lynn, I got to tell you, this is incredible. Again, I'm going to urge everybody, get involved in this experiment. Get involved in all the experiments, because truly, this is how we are going to change the world. And I'm so grateful for you, Lynn, for taking the initiative and going, even though you're a non-scientist, taking that initiative and changing the world like this. I think it's wonderful. I can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to be on your show, and I really do invite people to come on our website, theintentionexperiment.com, and our other website, theintentionworkshops.com, to come see about our workshops, and if they're in the LA, Portland, or Boston area, or anywhere in any way close by, please experience and taste the power of intention in a group with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lynn. I really appreciate it. And to all of my listeners, I will talk to you next week.
You have been listening to to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.